You are listening to the Live Free Experience. I'm your host, Brianna Bowley, trauma coach for high performers. I believe that understanding the nervous system and all its wisdom is the key to creating and experiencing all that we desire. And I believe that honest, anything goes conversation paves the way for us to begin a healing journey that has us continuously stepping into more of who we are. I've been blessed to work with, for, and alongside some of the best of the best in their chosen fields. And it's my pleasure to be the platform to share the wisdom and insights I've gained with each of you. Together, we'll explore trauma-informed performance and optimization, business, and self-expression. So in a world where everything touches everything, I encourage you to listen selfishly and with your own circumstance in mind. As I promise, if you found yourself here, there's a piece of wisdom wanting to land in your world.
So this episode today has been a long time coming, I feel. And it feels particularly special to me because today's guest is not only one of my nearest and dearest friends, but also just an all-round powerhouse, someone who's made a tremendous impact on my life. Tremendous. I've never used that word before, ever, I don't think. So I'm very excited to have Shiloh Blackett. Am I even saying that right? Blackett? Is that?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yes. You got it. Yes.
I'm very excited to have Shiloh join us today. So Shiloh, welcome.
Thank you. That was so beautiful. I was like, oh my God, how am I going to speak after that? She said tremendous. My heart just cracked.
It came out of my mouth. I was like, that's new. When did I use the word tremendous ever? So there we go. We're off to a good kickstart. So for those who haven't had the pleasure of coming across you and your work before, do you want to start us off by telling us a little bit about who you are?
Yes, I would love to do that. Ooh, who I am. What a beautiful question. I'll try not to get too deep like straight away. Who I am and what I do, I call myself a soul-led coach. I do energy work, breath work. I love anything that's based on relationships and union. It's one of my biggest passions, bringing the masculine and the feminine back together, bringing man and woman back together because we've been separated for far too long. And then teaching people how to reconnect with their souls and reconnect with grace, with God, with the universe. Yeah, that's my little spiel.
How did you get into that kind of line of work, I suppose you could call it?
That's a big question. It's been like a decade of so many different trainings and certifications. And the soul and God stuff is, I feel like it's been what everything has been leading up to, because I got to a point in my own journey with personal development and spirituality where I was like, there's a really big piece missing that's not getting covered enough in coaching work, that's not getting covered enough in events, in programs, which is this connection to grace, this connection to God, this connection to source, allness, whatever you want to call it. And I really believe that that is the ending of suffering when we're able to restore that relationship. Because when you sit in silence and you're able to feel the grace within you and outside of you, everything else disappears. So I was like, that's what needs to come into my work. And that's what I get to lead people home to, because the rest just melts away.
Beautiful. So for the sake of the listeners, because I feel like, you know, everyone will have kind of their own take on what the word God refers to. And I have my own take of this, and I have my own perceptions of what you're referring to, but I would love to hear, like, when you use the term God, what are you referring to?
Yes, I love this question so much, because we have so much conditioning as a society around the word God, especially anyone that's come from a space of religion. My parents especially had major religious trauma. So just the word God is really triggering to a lot of people because we have all of this trauma around it. So for me, I've actually, and I encourage everyone to do this, to come to your own definition of God, right? Because it's so personal and it's so intimate. It's something that you get to choose for yourself, not based on religious teachings, not based on someone else's idea of what grace or God or whatever you want to call it is. So for me, For me, it's pure love. For me, it's like this, it's like this unwavering presence that is pure, unconditional love that is completely devoted to your highest and the highest of everyone. It's like total oneness and unity and peace. Peace. Yeah. Really deep peace.
I love that. I love that. I always think of, you know, when I use the term God, what do they call it when like a word, the letters are broken down to like actual words in themselves? I can't think what it's called. Anywho, I always think of the word God as grand organized design.
Like, ooh.
It's a higher design. It's that grand order that creation is, where everything is perfect, where nothing is wrong, where nothing is needs fixing, you know, where everything is part of a higher calling or a higher design.
Yes, I love that so much. I think that that is so it, where everything is perfect. And that's a concept that a lot of people struggle with. And I have struggled with myself, because you're in your life and things happen and you're like, well, this isn't perfect. This traumatic event has happened and that doesn't seem perfect to me. That seems painful. But when you come from a space of broader perspective, and when you're able to sit in the silence and view it in a different way, view it from the space of God or grace, everything kind of transforms. I came from a space of having sexual trauma and all of the things, and working with my soul and working with that broader perspective was a huge piece in my own healing as well. So you're absolutely right. It is a space of, for me personally, perfection, absolutely, in everything. It's the everything.
Yes.
And the nothing.
Yes. Totally. It's the paradox, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I love the words you chose there of, you know, kind of that higher perspective. I always kind of envision, I'm very visual in the way that I think. I see it as like this zoom out, you know, like zooming out of life. Like, yes, like yourself, I'm someone who's, you know, been through trauma. And when I'm in it, when I'm deep in it, you know, again, I'm going to go with like a visual expression of this. It's like you're in the hole, you know, like you're in the hole of it. And all you can see is like the dirt surrounding you, the mud surrounding you. And that's your only perspective. And when you zoom out and you come up to that, you know, to the balcony view or the penthouse view, it's like, oh, I see everything surrounding that. And I see how everything just slots in perfectly and how that situation makes sense, you know. And it's what I hear in the work that you're offering is that it's granting people the opportunity to zoom out a little bit and to see that, you know, to get out of the hole and to see that higher vantage point.
Yes. And it's also, for me, understanding that it's also within you as well. It's like this beam of delicious God sparkiness that's also like straight within you and connected to the broader perspective as well. So it's like you can zoom out, but then also zoom way in. And it's this most beautiful, delicious dance. You're drinking tea, just so all of the listeners know, because I was like looking at the tea longingly. My whole soul just went, tea. But yeah, I think that's so true. And I love how you describe that, because I'm also super visual as well.
Yeah.
So just this whole thing around like zooming out. And for me, also understanding that I'll never be able to zoom out to the perspective of wholeness. So I get like these tiny little pieces that I try and fit together around events and things happening in my life. But God, grace, universe, soul, source, whatever you want to call it, knows all of the pieces of all of the people, of the whole world, of the everything, and how everything is all working together always for my highest as well, even when I can't even see it from inside or from zooming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have this kind of playing in my head of like, and I don't know how much you've kind of looked into this sort of stuff, but, you know, when we look at nature, and how nature is like, ultimately, I'm mindful of how I say this, because on one hand, I feel like it almost like takes away some of the magic, but in a way it also adds. But nature is ultimately like just a mathematical sequence, you know, like you look at, is it the Fibonacci sequence?
I think it's the Fibonacci sequence, and it's where, you know, like,
trust you on that.
Different plants are like, there are these mathematical sums where it's a pattern. And so, you know, the part of me that's like, oh, it's like breaking down something as incredible as nature into pure mathematics. It kind of takes away the magic, but then at the same time it adds, because it's like, oh my God, it's perfection.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And especially nature, because a lot of the time nature appears as imperfection. You know, when we think of like overgrown grass or plants that are half dead or they're taking over and they're unruly or whatever, they can look so quote unquote imperfect. And yet there's this incredible mathematic perfection to them.
I love that so much. And I love what you said as well around how we view things, because there's this part of us that wants to look for the imperfect in the perfect. So even the weeds and everything, there's a part of us that like wants to make that bad or wrong or something that isn't perfect. So we're looking at the weeds going, well, that's not pretty or beautiful, or some idea that we have in our head of what perfection is as well. So I love that you brought that up, because it's also around how we layer, or how our ego layers on top of the grace that is everything as well.
Yes. Yeah. Makes me think of, here you go, here's a fun little background story. one of my old, when I first moved to the Gold Coast, I went on this like real rampage of like, I want my room to be just full of plants. Like I want it to, you know, be one of like just a vibe where you walk in and it's all green and, you know, and this particular room that I was living in where I had plants along my windowsill, and the sun used to hit really direct at a certain time of the day, and it actually burnt a hole into the leaves of one of my plants. And I remember like watching this conversation play out in my head of like, what do I do with that plant now? Because it's like, it's no longer perfect, you know, like it's got holes burnt in its leaves from the sun. And like the disappointment I felt of like, oh, this plant's no longer perfect. And then kind of catching myself and going, no, it actually kind of adds character, like it adds storyline. And it's kind of cool, you know. And you saying that makes me think like, yeah, we do that to ourselves. Like we put ourselves through these kind of sieves of like what's perfect and what's not and what needs fixing, rather than seeing the quote unquote imperfections as the perfection in and of itself, you know?
Yes, 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 yes. I love that so much, because that's such a good example of what we do, because we do it with so many different things. We do it with the plant, we do it with ourselves, we do it with our partners, with our friends. It's like, there's this part of us that is determined to find something wrong, which is interesting. And I think that kind of goes back to childhood, which is a whole other conversation, where we were taught out of the kind of perfectness that we already knew to be true. Because as children, when that we're playing and exploring, and if you spend time with children or you think back to your childhood, you watch them play, even everything to them is perfect a lot of the time. Like there's no real making wrong. They'll see the plant with the hole in it and it's like, well, cool. The sun just burned a hole in this leaf. How cool is that? How perfect is that? How fun is that? They don't really do the same thing we do as adults, where we kind of look for and make wrong, which is really interesting, because I think we've been trained into it, which is a whole other conversation.
So I actually feel like this runs really nicely parallel with something that I want to share with you. And I believe I have shared this with you before. And I feel like this will kind of nicely link up to where I feel this conversation may go. But an acknowledgement to you, because for the listener's sake, and for those who don't know, at the end of 2020, I had the pleasure of actually living with Shiloh for a period of time. It was the end of 2020, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And Shiloh, you actually, you know, one of the things that I feel you really embody is like this, how do I word this? An element of acceptance. Acceptance is the word that I want to use. You know, I feel that society heavily operates from a space of always looking for what's wrong. And so always, you know, progressing through criticism. Something that I really watched in you during that time that I lived with you. And then, of course, as our friendship and our connection continue to grow and flourish from there, I was like, there's something different about Shiloh and the way she communicates. And it's that acceptance piece. And it's beautiful. You're one of my absolute favorite people for that, because it allows this beautiful kind of softening and opening for the people around you. And you've served as that for me. So I want to acknowledge you for that and just highlight it for those listening. Like, listen to how Shiloh communicates. It's just beautiful.
That was so beautiful. And I'd completely forgotten that we lived together for a while. I was like, where? Here? No. Like, my brain blanked because I've been in two different houses since then. I was like, what? That was so much fun. Thank you for that. That was such a beautiful compliment. And I am receiving that. And I feel like that came from a space of being so hard on myself. For such a long time, like a really, really long time. Just, I was the most critical person of myself and actually quite critical of the people around me for a really long time, which came from a deep place of self-hatred. I'm being totally honest. It was like total self-hatred, self-disgust, self-loathing. And then when I got to a space of starting to find love for the icky, sticky, shadowy parts of myself and hold those in compassion, I really felt that there was shifts in my life, in my personality, in my relationships, and most of all with my relationship with myself. And I really believe that that's such a big key, learning how to not just discover the parts of you that hurt and that are sticky. I like to call them sticky because they like feel sticky in your insides, but also greeting them from a space of compassion, because so often we go to love, like, let me try and love this part that I really secretly hate. But if you switch it to compassion, it's easier to reach for than love is, right? Compassion you can find quite easily for another person in your life. You can tune into like the flow or the energetics of compassion easier. So I always tell people when they're like, I need to love myself, I'm like, no, just meet your parts with compassion and the love will begin to flow from there. And that's how I really started when I began somatic work and energetic work with myself, just as a runoff from your story. So if you're doing the work, I highly recommend not aiming for love and aiming for compassion instead for your icky parts.
Yeah, and I think I so resonate with what you've said there about, you know, like I definitely have been, and I still catch myself in it, you know, the person who's incredibly hard on myself. And as a result, I held what I thought were very high standards and firm boundaries for other people. And then it wasn't until I sort of started to, like, I guess, see this new way that I started to go, oh, these things that I've labeled as standards and as boundaries are actually walls. You know, and I know you've spoken about this in the past online many times. And, you know, this isn't to say don't have high standards, and this isn't to say don't have boundaries, but rather it's to say, you know, check where they're coming from. Because I know for me, those boundaries and those high standards were, it was my defense mechanism, you know, and it was reflective of how harsh I was on myself. You know, and so the really cool thing for me in my journey with that is kind of being able to see where I do hold high standards on others, and the things that, I'm just going to say it, piss me off about other people, and then kind of going, okay, so like, what are they highlighting back to me about myself? Like, what are they inviting me into, and softening into that and relaxing into that? And I mean, all it is really, there's this small part of you that feels unsafe coming online. You know, it's showing you that, oh, there's a threat here, and that threat could be, you know, anything from like an obvious threat through to, you know, something really subtle. And so it's that invitation into, okay, well, what part of me feels unsafe here?
Yes, I love that you brought this up, because it's one of my favorite topics. I say boundaries versus barriers when I'm talking to my clients, because the online space, the personal development coaching industry, got really boundary happy. Every post you saw was about boundaries, and it kind of got me a little bit crazy, because I was like, all as I see at the moment is people putting up barriers to their healing. It's like, let me put up boundary. I'm doing like the little two fingers here. Let me put up a boundary here and here and here and here and here. But really, I'm just trying to protect myself from actually having to deal with my triggers and my wounds. Mm. because that person is triggering me. So let me remove them from my life and let me call it a boundary built in self-love, when the actual act of self-love is dealing with the trigger that the person is bringing up for you. And I say the more that you heal and the more that you expand and grow your consciousness, the less boundaries you actually need, right? Because you're vibrating at a different level, right? You're not actually getting hooked in to as many things, and you've dealt with more of your wounds, so you don't need all of these false boundaries. Boundaries are also really, really important when they come from a place of sacredness and self-love. It's like this sacredness where you go, I will be treated sacredly. I am a piece of God. This is not acceptable to the soul that I am, right? Not from a place of ego, which is, I don't want to look at my wound, so I'm going to try and remove the thing that is bringing the wound to the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, it's the energy under it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, of course, I'm still an absolute stand for boundaries. I think boundaries are incredible. And I was conditioned, as I think so much of society is, to be a people pleaser. You know, I didn't have boundaries. And truth be told, I actually think that in many ways I'm dealing with my once upon a time lack of boundaries through health challenges that I'm navigating at the moment, you know. And so the funny thing was, and I think that this is so incredibly human, I went from no boundaries to yo-yoing to, you know, like overkill on the boundaries. But the energy behind it was the same. You know, the energy of being like over the top and excessive in my boundaries was coming from that same people-pleasing kind of disconnected energy. And then, as you said, as I kind of went through the continuation of my healing journey, realizing that, you know, when I'm the embodiment of my boundaries, I no longer have to express them as this barbed wire fence. You know, they speak for themselves on an energetic level.
Yes. That is what you just said there is key. When I am the embodiment of it, it speaks for itself. And I think that's kind of the same thing I was talking about with the levels of consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're the embodiment of it, when your vibration has raised, you're less need of like communicating like a fierce, like, this is an absolute, you know, boundary for me from a space of wound. I always say, look at the wound first and deal with the wound first. And then once you've cleared the wound, then you can set the boundary from a place of, you know, sacredness.
Yeah, beautiful. One of the things that look at me just rattling off compliments. Can you pull this out of me? One of the things I love the most about you is your willingness to sit with yourself. Mm. And I think that, again, this is something that I've observed in you, and it's called me into, you know, deeper levels of this, spending more time in silence with myself and just feeling into, you know, what's there, rather than kind of always looking out here for that next thing. For the sake of the listeners, in your words, what's the intention behind sitting with yourself? What does it allow you access to?
I love this so, so much. This question is perfect. So I truly believe that the deepest work you can ever do is to sit in the silence. Everything is there for you. We have a space at the moment with so many different coaches and so many different programs and so many different events and retreats and tools and hacks and all of the things. And I'm going to say something bold and say that you don't need most of them if you'll just go and sit with yourself. A lot of them can be distractions from what's actually going on with you. So the intention with sitting with yourself in the silence is, first of all, to remove distraction, right? And the minute you do this, and I say this to people all the time, sit with yourself for 5 minutes and the room or the group will freeze. People will like go into complete panic at the idea of being with themselves for 5 minutes. And what I say is, if like the idea of 5 minutes without distraction with yourself terrifies you, that's something you get to explore and something you desperately need. But the first intention is to remove distraction, because there's so much noise. We're constantly bombarded with noise. We've got social media, we've got friends, we've got family members, we've got coaches, We've got programs, we've got work, we've got TV. It's like books constant. There's constant noise in our lives all the time. So the first thing is to remove distraction and actually allow some space where you can hear yourself and hear your own voice, not the voices and the noise of everything around you. So that's why it's called silence. And then it's going inside and being the consciousness that is observing you in the moment, right? So you're being the observer of what's happening in your feeling body. You're being the observer of what's happening in your mind, and you're doing it from a space of just observing, not from a space of judgment, not from a space of this needs to be changed or fixed, but just watching, just watching. And then the more you do this, the more you sit in the silence, then you can start to redirect to rebuilding a relationship with your soul, right? Because there's two different kinds of meditation, in my opinion. There's a meditation that is thinking with your eyes closed, which is what a lot of people practice. And then there is a meditation that is learning how to silence the noise in your mind so that you can actually hear the call of your soul, so that you can actually hear the voice of your soul, because the voice of your soul is very, very quiet. It is really, really quiet because it is eternal. It is the eternal part of you, and it knows it is eternal. Unlike the ego, it doesn't need to scream and shout. And this is how you always know the difference between the voice of your soul and the voice of ego. The ego will be the part of you that will have 10 different opinions and 10 different voices on one topic that will scream and shout at you and makes you feel contraction. And it's really loud, right? And the voice of your soul is quiet. It's something you actually have to go searching for. It's something you have to remove the noise so that you can hear. If you imagine yourself in a room like with loud music and, like, I don't know, fireworks going off. I don't know why that's happening in a room, but in this room it is, right? Or you're at a party and there's loud music and people talking and a thousand things happening. If there's someone whispering to you a meter away, you're not going to hear them, right? And this is your soul. So you imagine yourself in your life in this crazy room with all this music and party happening. You can't actually hear the whisper that's happening a meter away. So when you go to the silence, you're removing the noise so that you can hear the whisper, which is the only guidance that is ever going to lead you to what you want in your life, in my opinion.
I love that analogy, like loud room, everyone's, you know, yelling, screaming. And then, yeah, there's that person in the room who's just like, Shiloh.
It's literally like that, right? Yeah. And the other way you can tell the voice of your soul from the voice of your ego is the voice of the soul will always speak truth, whether you want to hear it or not.
Yeah.
It knows the absolute truth on every topic, every single topic, everything that's ever happened to you. And you'll reject that truth because you might not be ready to hear it sometimes and because it will be quiet. But that's the other way you can tell your soul. It will feel like absolute truth, not a kind of falsified truth that you have to convince yourself into or convince yourself to follow. The ego lies a lot. The mind lies a lot.
Yeah. And it does it to keep us safe, right? Like it does it because it's that, I guess, more animalistic part of us that wants safety. You know, it is on our team. It has its tricky ways of kind of seeking safety.
Yes. Yeah. Safety is key.
Yeah.
Everything that we do, every pattern we have, every, you know, what we call dysfunctional way of being or relating or operating in the world comes from a space of it once worked to keep us safe. Absolutely everything. Everything that you do right now that you feel that you shouldn't do when it first came into your reality, when you first started doing that thing or operating in that way, it was from a space of unsafety. So when I'm working with clients, I always say, this is something that gets to be honored, this part of you that you've been making wrong, even at a time to keep you safe. Right now you get to decide that you are safe and that you're making ways for you to be safe, so you don't need that dysfunctional part anymore.
Yes. I often say to clients, you know, that like if we're sitting here having this conversation, like that part of you worked, like it's job done, like
yes!
And how beautiful that you know, that function, that behavior, as you said, is there to keep you safe. And so it's you loving yourself. It's you wanting to survive. It's you wanting to live. And so, oh my God, like when you sit with that, it's like, thank you so much, you know? And it could be like, it could be this behavioral pattern or this quote unquote dysfunction that we've grown to hate and resent about ourselves. But when you kind of sit with that and anchor into, oh my God, like it's done its job. It served its purpose because I've made it. Like here I am. I'm still here. Like that's so incredible, you know? And yeah, I love the look on. I have one particular client. I'm obviously not going to name names, but I can still see the look on her face when she realized this thing that had been, you know, kind of ruling her whole life and she'd been making wrong for so long was also the thing that had kept her here for so long. That look of like, oh my God, you know, like mm-hmm. up with this part of herself that she'd hated for so long. It's my favorite thing.
Yes. And that's it. And then when you see that, when you see, oh, this came in to keep me safe, then you can actually meet it with compassion.
Yeah.
Then that's where the compassion can come in and then things can start to shift and dissolve and you can choose if it's still required.
Yeah.
But if something is playing out for you, like some kind of pattern is playing out for you, I would say ask yourself the question, how am I feeling unsafe right now?
Yeah.
Where am I feeling unsafe in my body, right? Which requires some consciousness in the moment for you to be aware and go, whoa, I'm about to do that thing. Yeah. Or I go eat 10 liters of ice cream. How am I feeling unsafe?
Yeah. 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 It's that invitation into like, what am I seeking here? You know, what's underneath this? What am I seeking? What am I trying to, what need am I trying to have met? You know, am I trying to avoid a threat? Is the ice cream an avoidance of the threat, or is the ice cream me seeking something that represents safety? You know, I often, if we're going to go with the food analogy, like I find myself, it's really cool. I look at the foods that I often find myself going to in moments of, in times of stress. And it's all the foods that remind me of, you know, my family. It's like hot chips. Oh my God, that reminds me of all the nights, you know, the Friday nights that I would spend at my grandparents' house where the family would all come together. Or it's chocolate. Oh my God, that takes me back to the moments when Dad would sit at the table and break off, you know, a square and hand out to each member of the family. So all those comfort foods for me in the moments of stress, the foods that I go to, it's like, oh, this is me seeking the safety and familiarity of my family. Foods are, you know, it's not me misbehaving, it's not me doing wrong, it's not me self-sabotaging, it's me seeking closeness and to feel connected and safe and held and nurtured.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think that's so true. And I feel like this also wraps back into the God stuff or the grace stuff, right? Because I have this theory that I'm in the process of testing, but I feel like what I'm learning at the moment is that most wounds can be traced back to like really core original wounds with God. Mm. Like this feeling of unsafety can like be traced back to I feel unsafe with, or I don't trust God. I don't trust God has my back. I don't trust in life, and I don't trust in God. I feel like are the same thing. They're interconnected, as well as I don't trust myself because you are a piece of God. So I don't trust myself is the same as I don't trust God. Mm. Right. So I feel like a lot of different wounds, like if you get like keep going down to the core of them, a lot of them can come back to our relationship with grace as well. Mm. Something that I'm discovering at the moment.
Love that. I love that. My brain's pinging off in a million different directions right now.
I know, mine too.
I often have this, you know, as I've said, I think of God as, you know, the grand organized design, that kind of higher perspective. And then I also have this kind of, and it's almost conflicting, but at the same time, it's totally in alignment with, you know, that perception of God. It's the belief that like, I am God. You know, like you worded it there as like a piece of God. But for me, it's almost like, well, like I am the creator. My life is my life designed by me, whether consciously or unconsciously. Who I am is reflected back to me by the world around me. So it's like, I'm the creator. Like I am the grand organized design.
Yes. No, that makes perfect sense. And that is the hardest piece for people to accept.
Yeah.
That is, people are like, because we're so great at externalizing things. Mm. So we're like, people will start to build this relationship again with grace, and they go, okay, I can understand that there is like this bigger thing that makes sense to me, but understanding that I am also that I am also God, that's too much. Because then there's also a certain level of ownership and responsibility in my own life as well. If I am also the creator, then I can't put all of my prayers out here and be like, there's something else that's in charge of absolutely everything in my life, instead of like the ownership that needs to come with, it's a co-creation,
yeah.
Right? It's a co-creation with the bigger thing, yeah. Right? And understanding that you're a piece of it, that you are that fully as well. It's the hardest piece for people to get.
Yeah. I actually want to share, and I'm trying to think, am I going to remember this story well enough to actually tell it?
I believe in you.
I might kind of tweak it slightly to make it work. But Preston Smiles, a previous mentor of mine, I'm gonna kind of steal this from him. It's a story he once told, and I think it perfectly encompasses, you know, that perception of like the zoom out, the higher vantage point. Oh my God, I'm gonna completely butcher this.
yes,
the story is that, you know, something happens and it's perceived as this negative, and then the next day something else happens and suddenly that perceived negative is actually like a blessing, this huge blessing that saves the life of the sun, you know? And then the next day, like that blessing has created this negative. So it's like, oh my God, like poor us, you know, like this is so bad. You have such bad luck. You know, I think the term that's used consistently throughout the story is like, oh my God, you have such bad luck. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. Right. And then it's, you know, like the next day something good happens and it's made that previous negative again a positive. And it's like, oh my God, you have such good luck. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. Right. And it's just all like, yeah, based upon like what we don't know, and what we don't know, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And looking at it through kind of rose-colored glasses, or looking through it through, you know, like zoomed in, not being able to see the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the exact story you're thinking of. I remember Preston telling it. And I can't
say it here, Shiloh, because I don't
remember. I can't remember the details either, yeah. But I feel like you brought it back in. I'm so impressed with you, because I was like, frick, I can't jump in and help her here because I can't remember the details either. But yeah, that's what it is. And it's not jumping to the worst, not jumping to the, this is such a horrific thing that has happened, which is so hard. Yeah. And saying this, fully understanding them when traumatic or tragic things happen, when loss happens, it's really, really difficult not to jump to the negative, not to go, okay, well, this is bad. But what I would say is it comes back to sitting in the silence. Because if you sit with the feelings that event has brought up within you, if you sit with the grief or the loss or the anger or the frustration, and you keep going layer through layer, eventually you hit this kind of bottom space of peace and silence, and then you get it. And then you can actually feel the grace of things. Yeah. So I would say go to the silence and go to the sitting first, and try and let go of the judgments as hard as it is, and see, wait and see. Wait and see.
Yeah. I think there's an element of patience wrapped up in that, you know, this thing of like, okay, I don't have all of the information yet. I only have like what's right here in front of me. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen 6 months down the track. And, you know, as humans, I think we're, and I'm not sure how much of this is completely instinctual, you know, like purely animalistic, and how much of this is conditioned in, but we have this like innate sense of urgency, you know, in everything. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so it's like, yeah, the patience piece, like, okay, at some point I'll have more information and we'll see, you know. I often think of like some of the worst things that have ever happened to me, quote unquote, worst things that have ever happened to me. I think back now and I'm like, oh my God, like if that didn't happen, where would I be now? Like, that is the biggest blessing that I could have ever gone through. But at the time, it felt like my life was ending. You know, it felt like this is it, like I can't go on. And now I sit and I go, oh my God, thank God that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm so grateful. And to the point of tears, I'm so grateful that that happened, that everything that played out just as it did, because if it didn't, if just one little thing was different, it would have completely changed my path. And I'm sure that would have been perfect too. And yet I wouldn't want to change a thing, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And isn't that a beautiful space to be in? And I feel exactly the same way. It's seeing things from the broader perspective where you've healed enough and you go, holy shit, that actually probably was the best thing that happened. I know for me, the sexual assault, all of the things that happened around men got me to a place where I can understand my clients in a whole other way, where I can help women navigate sexual assault, rape, all of the things, because I've had the personal experience. Mm-hmm. If I wouldn't have been able to be of service in the way that I am now to women, if I hadn't have had those experiences, mm-hmm. because I would have just been trying to understand, not having had it happen, worked through it, moved through it, and come out the other end of it. So to me, those events, I like thank the men. It sounds crazy. People like were like, what the hell? But I'm like so thankful to the men that I had those experiences with, because it enables me to be a massive service now. Mm. And something else I want to say is the piece around patience, I think, is so interesting. And it comes back to God again, right? Because when you have total faith in allness, when you have total faith that your prayers are always answered, even before the asking, patience doesn't even need to exist for you anymore. Patience comes in when you don't trust that the end result is guaranteed.
Mm.
That's the only time you require patience. You're like, I got to be patient. And you're like, oh, but because it's like, oh, I don't know if it's coming. Okay, be patient. Oh, and it's like this contraction. But when you're fully assured, like you're certain of the result, you're like, it's done, man. Me and God, me and grace, me and my soul are like totally like 5x5 at the moment. When you're like certain, it's like, I don't need patience because I know. Yeah. I know that it is done. So I feel like that comes back to a God wound as well.
I love that. Very true. Mm. Very true. I want to share, and I feel like a part of me is holding back on this because I'm like, is it relevant? But I feel like there's threads of relevance here, and part of me wants to say it. So I feel there's probably someone who needs
do
to
do it.
For the sake of the listeners, I had a very chaotic, unexpectedly chaotic day today. And I noticed it came up in me, this thing of, you know, it was a lot of like responsibilities, life responsibilities, business responsibilities, you know, appointments, lots of meetings, things like that. So it was very just go, go, go. And I normally wouldn't structure my days that way, but it just, the cookie crumbled that way today. And I found myself sitting with this thing of like, oh, what's the word? Almost like this ungratefulness for what I have. You know, this sense of like, oh, I'm grateful for these responsibilities that I have as a coach and as a business owner and as who I am in the world, who I've chosen to be in the world. And a beautiful friend of mine introduced me to this meditation concept called negative visualization. And it was literally just a process of like, okay, well, what's the thing that's frustrating you at the moment? And now spend some time considering and visualizing what life might be like if you didn't have that thing. And so for me today, this process was around my business. It was like, my business was frustrating me being a coach, being a quote unquote public figure, being, you know, in the public eye to some degree was the thing that was frustrating me. And I sat and I think within the first like 15 seconds of just like imagining, oh my God, what would my life be like if I didn't have this thing that's creating these frustrations and sticky points in my world. Oh my God. Like so much of my life would just not be what it is. And there were ugly tears. There were ugly tears. And I guess the way this kind of draws back in my mind is that it's like the perfection in the imperfection, you know, this part that's like drawing out this sense of suffering, this unnecessary sense of suffering. And yet it's such a beautiful piece of my life that if I didn't have it, like, I just can't comprehend. Like, yeah, I can't comprehend it if it wasn't here, you know?
Yes. That's so true. You've just said the most beautiful thing. And I'm so glad that you brought it into the space, because this applies to so many different areas, right? We complain about our partners, but then if they were to not be there the next day, right? We'd be crushed. We complain about everything we've got to do with our children. What if one of them was taken from us that afternoon? We complain about our businesses, but what if we didn't have a business? I can remember times when I didn't have a business, and you'd be able to remember those times too, when you're in the process of beginning your business and building your business. It's fucking hard work. Oh God, I don't know if I can swear on your podcast, but I did. Right? But it can change in an instant. So it's being really, really aware of that. Like, even the stuff that I'm deciding is difficult, like, how hard would it be without it?
Mm.
Like, yeah. And something else you said, which was unnecessary suffering.
Yes.
God, we love to do that to ourselves. The unnecessary suffering. It's insane. And it all comes from a space of fear. It's another thing I believe, which is from Course in Miracles, which is an incredible book where they talk about there only being ever kind of two emotions and two thoughts, one based in love and one based in fear. Mm-hmm. And if you really look at all emotions, you really look at all thoughts, you can find that either one is either rooted in love or rooted in fear. There's only ever two categories. So it's really looking at that as well.
Mm. Yeah. I love that. Honestly, it blew my mind today. Like, just 15 seconds. 15 seconds was all it took of like, huh, what would life be like if I didn't have my business? And then I was blubbering, you know, like this thought of, yeah, like my business is, I love this work. I love this work. And without it, yeah, I'd be without so many of the things that I just adore about my life. So
I want to add something. I want to interrupt you for a moment and add something, because it's not just what would your life be without that, but what about all of the people that you've been in such deep service to, all of the people that you've been helping, right? All of the people that you've yet to encounter that you get to be of such incredible service to, which you are an absolute rock star, right? So it's them as well, and the impact on their lives, and then the ripple of that to the people in their worlds and who they're of service to and who they help, and it ripples out and it ripples out and it ripples out and it ripples out.
Yeah. Oh. So this leads me down a thread in my mind of like, and I say this, well, for my sake, as much as for the listener's sake, but if there's ever any part of you that doubts your value or your worth in this world, the invitation is there to think of the ripple effect of something as simple as, I don't know, putting petrol in your car, you know, and thinking of like putting petrol in your car, the money that the exchange, you know, the investment, that's, you know, putting food on the table for the staff there, and the food on the table for them, you know, for their family, is creating the nourishment for them to go out and do their thing. And you know, something as simple as just putting petrol in your car, or whatever the seemingly small or irrelevant task that you do day to day, when you sit with the level of ripple effect that that has, like, you are so important.
Yes.
So vitally important to not only the people in your, you know, close sphere, but everyone that you cross paths with throughout, you know, and even the people who you don't cross paths with, right? This is the ripple effect. You know, when you kind of sit with that, it's like, oh, wow, like my value is infinitely more than we could ever, ever, ever even wrap our minds around.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. And I also think if you're in a space in your life at the moment where you feel like you're not of value, or you're not of value to the people around you, sometimes we get in spaces where, like, especially in deep depression and, you know, people that are suicidal, which I've been in that space a long time ago, you get to a space where you're like, I'm not of value and I don't have anything to offer, and there is no ripple effect for me being here. I might as well not be here. And if you're in that space, I would invite invite you to go and create a ripple. I would invite you to go and pay for someone's coffee. I would invite you to go and do something for someone else that is of service that doesn't benefit you. Mm-hmm. And if you continue to do that, you will slowly edge yourself out of the darkest depression you've ever been in. One of the reasons that we stay in these depressive states is because we're so focused on self. Mm. And when you begin to focus on outside of self in the way of others and finding ways to be of service, suddenly light is brought in because you can actually feel your impact in the world. Mm. So if you can't feel that at the moment, if you can't feel your value, go out and create some value and add some value to someone's life.
Oof. I love that. I know I've told you this before, Shiloh, and this is a sidestep, but your voice, just sitting here like melting.
You know what? I feel the same when I listen to you speak.
Really?
Anytime you like go on like a tangent or you go down a path, I'm just like, ooh, like it feels so exciting and there's such vibrancy. I get like, oh yeah, I'm so there.
I love that. You make me melt. It's the best.
Ditto. It's equal meltiness.
So for the sake of the listeners and anyone that's wanting to connect with you, where can they find you?
Social media. Yeah, Instagram. You can find me under my name, Shiloh Blackett, whatever you want, however you want to pronounce it. It's actually Polish. It's like Błachut in Polish, but we don't say it that way. But you can find me on social media. Yeah, definitely connect, drop in. I always love meeting new people and chatting with new people. There's heaps of content there as well.
Beautiful. Do you have any programs or anything that you want to give a little like low-key?
Yeah, I am launching a 3-month program coming mid-January that is called Inner Grace, just like my podcast Inner Grace, which Brie will be on next week. We're going to get to have another amazing conversation. But it's going to be a 3-month deep dive that's really focused on connecting you back in with your own soul, removing the noise and practices that actually enable you to move the noise so that you can actually hear the call of your soul and reconnect with grace, God, source, whatever you want to call it as well, because I really feel that it is the missing piece. And when we move from soul and when we move from grace, everything else in our lives starts to kind of melt away and the suffering goes with it. Yeah. And it's going to be a really, it's going to be a difficult but beautiful program because you're going to be forced to let go of a lot of things that your ego has chosen so that your soul can make some choices. And I just want to say this really quickly before we end. I think that we've given our mind way too much work. I really believe that our minds are so cluttered and so like full of noise because they were never meant to make so many decisions for us, right? Our soul was meant to step in and help make decisions. We were supposed to move more from soul, but we've given the responsibility of everything to our brains and to our minds, not engaging our soul in any capacity. So no wonder your mind feels totally overwhelmed all the time. So the program's going to be about listening to the soul and moving from there again.
Ooh. I love that. The words that come to mind for me is it's the evolution of turning the fight into a dance.
Ooh, yes. Yes. Fighting never gets us anywhere. Fighting against anything just causes more suffering.
Yeah. It's all just an invitation to dance.
Yeah. I love that.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad we finally got to do this. It's been such a long time coming.
Yeah.
Every bit as magic as I knew it would be.
Yeah,
we get to meet again next week.
Woo! Thank you so much. I always love speaking with you. I've missed you, actually.
Me too. I've missed you. Yeah. All right, my love, thank you. And I love you and I adore you and everything that you stand for.
Oh, I love you. I adore you. I adore everything that you stand for as well.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Live Free Experience podcast. Now, I'm a real person back here, so every mention, every share, every bit of feedback is deeply valued, and I love nothing more than hearing what golden nuggets are landing for you. So if something did land for you, or there's someone in your world who needs to hear this, please share it with them and share it to your social media. Tag me in it so that I'm aware of it and I can share it to my story. As I said, every little bit counts. Every little bit helps get this message out there. And I want to close off today's conversation. Ladies, this one's for you. I have a free ebook and audio training called Fierce and Free. And this is for the woman who is looking to really step things up a level in her world, looking to overcome people-pleasing tendencies, build greater boundaries, and just be more discerning in where their energy is going. So you can get access to that one free at www.fiercefreewoman.com. And I will speak to you all soon.